Tell it again, Umed. Tell that joke again.
A guy walks into a bar, right? Yep. He orders the usual.
Oh, man. Welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Nerds and Celibacy. I'm your host, Nicholas Patterson.
Oh, I am Umed Abdullah.
The other host.
Yeah.
Look at you go. I'm just smiling up a storm. That was a really good joke Umed told. Yeah. Can you tell it a third time?
Okay, so a guy walks into a bar, right? Yeah. Orders the usual.
It's really, you have to see the hands he does for it.
It's all in the hands.
It's all in the hands. Really. Okay, and here with us today?
James Evans.
Yeah.
That's my name.
And we're going to be talking, we're going to take a little bit of a different change from our normal comic book nerds and our celibacy episodes, and we're going to be talking about comic books today.
Edgy.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be very, very different.
But yeah, we got more interestingly, the psychology of superheroes, but more so just people who, like you said, write superheroes themselves, everything. I think it's going to be a really interesting subject to tackle because there's like, you always have to wonder why people do things. And I think that's so interesting to me to find out why Superman does what he does. And
why does my girlfriend cheat on her? On me.
Why does she cheat on her? That's a real question.
Why does my girlfriend
She's cheating on her
herself?
With you. It's weird. Oh.
She's got problems, man.
She tells everyone she's practicing celibacy and then...
She fucks everyone.
Oh, I'm just going to go off mic and cry for them.
This is just becoming the Nick psychology show.
Yeah, let's talk about Nick's psychology for
a
little bit.
All right, well...
I changed my mind. I don't want to go there. It's a little too dark.
Yeah, it's very, very,
comic books
very
haven't
dark.
Grown up enough for that yet.
No. One day they'll make a comic book based on my life, and it will just be called Please Touch Me. And the picture will just be me in the corner on a bed naked, just kind of
with a really sad,
over.
Lonely look on your face and a flaccid penis.
And just comic books covered in blood, just like sprawled out in front of me.
Covered in blood.
Blood.
Maybe
blood,
like a tin of ice cream.
Yeah.
Because you fucked the ice cream.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't blood, but that's what we want the audience to think. It was actually going to be, I fucked up, put ketchup on the ice cream, flipped out because I realized you don't eat ice cream with ketchup.
Strip naked, open some comic books and started crying. Yeah. There you go.
Well, like me and Umed, we shared the same room. This is our living arrangement. And so Umed knows more than anyone.
Fan fiction time.
Oh, man. Think about that. Imagine what if someone did comic book nerds and celibacy, but a fan fiction
I'm
version?
I'm sure you've got fans out there somewhere who are already like
thinking
busily writing really dirty, bi-curious
what
fan fiction about you guys.
After the microphones get turned off and it's...
The microphones go off, they go on.
Exactly.
That should be, what's it called? Comic book nerds and celibacy when the mics go off.
And there's the bloody, ice creamy grossness delicious on the cover.
Yeah.
Oh.
We have overthought this. This
Do
is
you know
like,
what?
Yeah.
The moment that I found out that someone's actually done a fan fiction based on comic nerds and celibacy, we're bringing that person on the show and we're giving them $100 out of Umed's wallet.
You're all heart, Nick. Seriously.
I am so hard right now.
I'll just take it from the theater company budget.
Yeah. Well, we had a good last show. Why not?
Yeah.
All right.
So,
Psychology.
Let's start it off by you were saying the people who wrote Superman were like.
Yeah. It's interesting because when superhero comics got started up, they were not high art by any stretch of the imagination. They were pretty cheap print media. Derived from like pulp adventure stories and things like that. And but it's interesting that even though the stories are really simplistic, you can see a lot of the creators in the books. Superman is the first traditional superhero, and his creators, Siegel and Shuster, were one of them was a Canadian, one of them was an American. They were both second generation Jewish immigrants. And a lot of academics and stuff have looked at sort of how Superman can be interpreted different ways, like the idea that, Jews are an invisible minority living in North America. He's an immigrant. In a lot of ways, his origin story is similar to like Moses and everything coming down the Nile in a basket and stuff. So there's all that. And there's also weird stuff if you want to read into it really uncomfortably. You know, he's a nerdy, unimposing guy, and then he takes his clothes off and he's amazing. You know, and that's sort of part of the fantasy for a lot of people is this idea that like girls might not like me, but if they saw me with my clothes off, I'd be Superman.
Yeah.
Or the PG version.
That's what I tell everyone.
Absolutely. Best
girl,
pickup line.
Every girl I've almost slept with, I've told.
Almost slept with. Yeah. But they didn't see you without your glasses on. So
I know. Well, I would do The Naked Man, and then...
The Naked Man.
That was a How I Met Your Mother reference for those of you just joining us at home.
Okay. I didn't never watch that show.
And basically, The Naked Man is... what is it? Is it one out of every four times?
Yeah, one out of... I think it was six times.
Maybe. Every six times. And basically, what you do is the girl leaves the room, come back in, you're naked, and one of every six times, she'll just be like, oh, you're naked, I'll have sex with you.
Might as well, those right?
I mean, yeah, you're already naked.
You've done half the work.
Yeah, and it's to the point where if I don't... This is going to be a really embarrassing scenario. If I do whatever we had
those
sex,
those are such crippling odds, though.
I'm thinking of just getting a Superman costume with the junk cut out, and I'll wear that under my clothes at all points in time, and then she'll leave, she'll come back, and she'll be like, he's naked, but he's also Superman.
So
there, I can make that work.
That moves
for me.
It up to like two or three out of six.
Yeah, I've already covered like six bases. It's perfect. Like, right. First base, kissing, second base, and then third base, and then like sixth base, sleep with the superhero.
Superman.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know? The new so rules. Then,
yeah, we add on our own bases.
Yeah.
Well, usually for me to even get close to a girl, I have to add on about 12 different bases.
Yeah, bases like stop hyperventilating.
Yeah.
Wake
get
up
my inhaler. Yeah, wake up's an important one.
Because
yeah,
you black out, right? You're some moments, you know, you're down. And
then you're like, oh, my, you're still here.
Yeah.
They must be true love.
Wait for her.
She called an ambulance.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, basically, yeah, it's like wake up, stop hyperventilating, talk to her at a party. She makes it with my best friend, wait 6 months until it's acceptable for, you know, not to go against the bro code. Talk to her again, introduce her to my parents, wait about 6 months until she forgives me, and then I plant the first kiss on her.
And that's
well, she's sleeping.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. What are you talking about, Jason? Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't it be when she's sleeping?
Yeah.
Babies. And I think even the psychology in that is very healthy,
as my therapist told me. Shortly before I murdered her, but there's this like,
issues, man.
But there's this you know, interesting thing here that we're riffing on almost by accident about superheroes, which is this like wish fulfillment thing that if you look at Marvel especially, there's this idea that if you're an outcast or you're a nerd or people don't respect you or look to you as an equal, that's because they're afraid of you because you're greater than them. That you know they can't see how amazing you are, and if they could, they would be even more afraid of you because you're super, you know, this is their mutant mentality.
It's
this
like,
idea
it's like,
that, like
Lex Luthor with Superman. Yeah. I mean,
you just sound like my mom whenever
your mom
she
accuses
talks
you
to
of
me.
Being a mutant.
Nick,
is that
it's
this?
Like Lex Luthor with Superman.
No, but like exactly, and that's how.
Well, this whole thing of like, you know, the girl says no to you, the jocks bully you, whatever. This idea, you know, you need a crutch to fall back on. A lot of times, like that. You know, those people who are so marginalized get pretty deep psychological scars from being bullied and everything. And superheroes a lot of time offer an alternative, this idea where they just don't see who you really are. They really don't see the greatness that's inside of you. That's sort of the kind of the rewarding message for a lot of, you know, young people who read comics.
And do you know what's so funny about that? Because I've been thinking about it lately and, you know, going to university and you're meeting people that you didn't normally grow up with. And I always find it weird when people don't kind of worship superheroes, because I'm kind of like, superheroes to me are... you know, the peak of humans, you know, they're the nicest, they go out to save other people. And I'm like, if you could worship someone, why not make it someone who does that? And then exactly that point, what I realized is, you know, and there's a reason why it's the nerdy kids who've been bullied that are the ones that read comic books, because they are looking, you know, kind of for
that. They can relate.
Yeah, they can relate to it. And that's why it's so funny, because you would think that technically, you know, the jocks that are powerful and, you know, everyone loved, they should be able to relate more to the superheroes, because that's pretty much, you know what I mean?
If I can be really nerdy and genuine for a sec,
the
new Captain America movie, there's a great line where the scientist who gives him his powers and everything is talking about how if you give power to somebody, you should give it to somebody who has none, because a strong man has had power his whole life and takes it for granted and will abuse it, but a weak man knows the value of strength.
Oh, so
you know,
true.
So I'm totally like shilling for Marvel right now. You should go see Captain America, it's really good. But, yeah, it's this idea that compassion is bred in being a victim, and that's a recurring thing in every superhero origin story. Well, you're the victim of something.
And that's why I think the nerdy kids are the ones that you love superheroes, because they realize and they go, these are the peak of humans. You know, these are who we should all try to be.
This is who I would be
if I had this ability, and all the people who growing up, you know, all the bullies or the jocks who have the power, you know, they already have it. Why should they even look at
it? Is it for the right reasons, though? Because, I mean, superheroes are just like hyperbolic examples of men, real men, and they're just the most extreme examples of men that already exist. And you know, like humanity taken to its extremist form, you've got selfless people who try to save the world, and then you've got people who want to destroy it.
Well, that's it. It's, again, since it started in such a simplistic form, like we talked about in the 40s, the story dynamics, you've got the basic things you need to put in a story. You've got a protagonist and an antagonist. You want to make the protagonist as sympathetic as you know how, and the antagonist as evil as you can imagine. So with Nazis and things, it was very easy to do. But ultimately it comes down to this really subjective thing that the artists bring to it. Where, again, in the 40s, you know, a lot of times the superheroes became establishment figures after a while because the values they embraced were very, you know, gung-ho.
That's why
American.
They were so iconic, yeah.
Yeah, but there was also a lot of reaction against that in underground comics in the 60s. But anyway, the idea that if I was given power, if I was given the opportunity that I've been denied because I'm unhealthy or a nerd or because I'm a visible minority, anything. If I was given the same abilities as anyone else or more abilities, I would do better with it because of what I've, you know, because of what makes me me. That's sort of the message. But the flip side of that is you see it a lot in comics from the 90s to present where you've got characters who are given power and become very violent anti-heroes and everything like that. And what sort of creep, and I love a lot of those stories because they're really kind of edgy and interesting, but what it sort of shows a little bit is a reality of a different time that unlike, you know, Siegel and Shuster, who may have been nerdy outcasts, you know, Jewish kids living in America in the 40s or 30s, what you see is sort of a Columbine-like mentality. We've got, you know, nerdy outcast-type characters who are given extreme power and use it to do horrible, horrible things to the bad guys. You know, they're tearing them apart, they're shooting them and stuff like that. And it's interesting because, like we talked about in the last episode, there's this mentality of, like, I can do whatever I want to the bad guy because they're bad. And it sort of
and
shadows...
it's justified because
it's justified
of it. Yeah.
Because I was the victim. So it's interesting that, like, the psychology of the storyteller definitely comes into the psychology of these characters.
Absolutely.
And it's not always pretty.
Psychology is really interesting because when you look at, like, Superman... Superman grew up, like he didn't have all his powers at first. He couldn't fly originally, but he gains his power slowly. And another really interesting point someone brought up with Spider-Man is Spider-Man's parents died. And in the new movie, he seems kind of like, I don't want to say emo, but like, you know, he's sitting at his desk during class drawing, whatever. I think that depends on how long ago his parents died, because if his parents died when he was 3 or 4, he would be much more accepting than he would if they had died, you know, 3 years ago. And I think, you know, he grew up with his aunt and uncle, but in the new movie, like in the old movie, Peter Parker was just a nerd, and I'm sure he was obviously...
Well, he's sort of like bright-eyed and cheesy and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the same Raimi, but yeah.
And then now in the new Spider-Man,
well,
it's
they didn't
like
even bring up his parents dying in that movie to add on to what you're
exactly.
saying.
And he was okay with it, I think.
But
like
I
loved his yeah. aunt and uncle were his parents as far as he was concerned. In the new movie, it seems like he's not okay with it, and...
Well, that he's a little more troubled, because I think that in the 60s, Stanley made a great call with a lot of his characters by riffing on sort of new realities that were being accepted, that he didn't live in a traditional nuclear family. You know, it wasn't like parents and siblings. It was him living with his aunt and uncles. His parents were nowhere to be seen. Cool. And that was sort of a new thing to be talking about in a superhero story.
In the original comics, other people didn't agree with that. And they would kind of question him when you, where your
because
parents,
pa-
my,
yeah, okay.
I live with my aunt and uncle. Why don't you live with your parents? Because my parents are dead. Oh,
yeah, and
well, I feel like a jerk.
And it's like, well, now that it's been, you know, 40 years since Spider-Man was created, you've got this divorced parents are extremely common, that family dynamics have changed a lot. And we've spent, you know, since the 60s, a lot of family values changed.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily for the negative. A lot of really interesting stuff happened. But we've seen very different family dynamics. So I think it's interesting that where Sam Raimi grew up with the 60s Spider-Man, this new director, Mark Webb, has seen comics since then, and he's riffing on that a little more. So a more kind of contemporary feel might be in order. I don't know if the movie will be any good, but
well, I watched a cool documentary about hippies and how they came to be, and it was about how, like, in after the World War II, the little daughters of all the soldiers, the brothers and fathers, you know, they saw their brothers and fathers die. So when they became mothers, they wanted a perfect house with a white picket fence, and they would take good care of their kids and spoil them and give them ice cream and everything. And what that did is it gave birth to a generation of kids with a sense of entitlement of I deserve this because their mothers treated them really well and pampered them all their life because their mothers saw the terrible effects of war and wanted to give their kids all the things they couldn't have. And then that gave birth to the if it feels good, do it, you know, mentality,
yeah.
And that became hippies. And now you can start sort of see that blending into comics, because now as those people start writing comics, you've got, like you said, it's more style over substance.
Well, I think what's interesting is, you know, because it's cool how this volumes between being about comics and about, you know, social values and realities and psychology and stuff. I'm really into this. But the 60s thing that was going on, the change was so fast and so diverse. I mean, you saw the if it feels good, do it sort of thing. And that emerged from a sense of entitlement. Absolutely. But what's interesting is that what that generation also managed, that was one of the first generations to really rail against the establishment in at that scale that you saw in the 1960s. And that, sorry, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, like, even Martin Luther King and all the things that were happening with African Americans is huge.
And what's interesting is both of those things are riffed on a lot in the 1960s superhero stories under Marvel. That's what differentiated them from DC, because DC was in the crapper in the 60s. It wasn't really until the Adam West show brought it back all campy that people were paying attention to superheroes again. Anyway, but that if you look at the early DC characters, they're all riffing on those realities. You've got outcasts as heroes. You've got orphans as heroes, and not just in a Bruce Wayne way. I mean, the game keeps changing on Spidey right from the beginning. You know, he tries to make money off of his powers, and he learns the big lesson from Uncle Ben's death and everything. And it's this idea where, for all the it feels good, do it stuff, the hippie generation was still a very moral generation in a lot. They believed in peace and love, and that's become a cliche, but this reality of, like, overcoming, you know, age-old differences that have been tearing people apart in war. And so that those are the baby boomers now, and the generation that they brought apart, I think, have a lot of the, if it feels good, do it, but none of the empathy or compassion that the hip generation had.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what we're seeing in the kind of ultra-violent comics of the 80s, 90s, and present.
Let's talk about Superman then. And, like you were saying, Superman can hear anyone crying out ever.
Yeah, well, that's something that I've griped to. I'm one of the few people who's, like, unironically attached to Superman in a pretty big way. I think he's a great
recently
character.
It was funny because growing up, I didn't, like, and part of that was just my father hated Superman. So I immediately became a Marvel guy. But just, you know, through watching Smallville and reading more Superman comics and stuff, like, Superman, there's a reason why Superman's Superman, and so many people, and that's why everyone has a Superman versus Batman, Batman's cool because Batman's
darker. I was right
about
to say, yeah.
There's a reason, like, and even, like, you can even relate that to Beatles and Rolling Stones, you know, when they first came out, and there was that group that the Beatles were kind of, you know, the good boys, the Rolling Stones were the bad boys. So people liked Rolling Stones because they're like, oh, you know, these are different and stuff. But there was a reason why Beatles are still one of the most popular artists today.
Yeah, yeah.
And like Superman, it's because he's a good boy, and sure, he can be seen as, you know, like the Boy Scout in every sense, but the world needs the Boy Scout.
The interesting thing about Superman is that I come across so many people who hate Superman because he's the be-all, end-all and is extremely powerful. But the greatest thing about that is Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. He learns that. And like you said, when Spider-Man puts on the symbiote suit,
the
Venom takes control and he becomes like this darker entity. Superman is good and good forever and always stays good.
Superman's the only superhero that you'll ever find in comics who is given absolute power and it never corrupts him.
And fans don't rally against it. They're not mad that he doesn't, you know, and that's interesting, I think.
You would think any other scenario people would say, because it's just time, like, there's never been a situation before where, you know, a dictator, literally anyone in this world, has been given absolute super, like, you know, absolute power and has not
been corrupted.
If I can, you said something really interesting about Beatles and Rolling Stones, Batman, Superman. What I think you have in superheroes, because they're such simplistic stories that everybody connects with in some way, even if they resent them because they're cheesy. Superheroes in a lot of ways are like Rorschach tests. You look at them and everybody sees something different because they're so interesting and iconic, but simplistic. Superman shouldn't ever be this dark, menacing figure because it would feel inappropriate. But this idea that a lot of people don't fear him as an establishment figure or anything anymore. There's this, I just think it's interesting that, like, he doesn't do the bad thing. He doesn't do the bad boy act, and no one will ever really want that character to. But it's interesting. You know, he was the. I'm not really sure how to put words to it. It's not because he's the first, but there's something so amazing about that.
Well, everyone always says, like, they hate it because he's so powerful, but and they're like, oh, Superman's a stupid comic because he gets his way because he's so powerful and Kryptonite's his only weakness. But I love him because he's my favorite superhero because, despite, like, he kills himself for humanity.
Yeah, he's like Christ.
In the Doomsday sense, he's exactly like Christ. Yeah, the fact that, and especially in that scenario where it's, you know, it's a time where people, Superman wasn't everyone's favorite, and that's why, and everyone had their problem with Superman. And, you know, despite the fact that, and because, like, right now I'm reading The Death and Life of Superman, and in that scenario where he could have obviously backed down. You know what I mean? He could have backed down. Even in that, they say, and they're like, you know, let's all go regroup. We'll get all the rest of the heroes together. We'll come back and fight him. And he's like, no, more people are going to die. I don't want anyone else to be hurt. I'm going to end this now. And sacrifices himself.
There's this really genuine, because at the end of the day, there's something cool about superheroes that it sort of bridges id and superego, which is something we talked about earlier, how mm-hmm. you can live this fantasy life where you can do whatever you want because it's justified. Mm-hmm. And Superman, if nothing else, provides ultimate justification that no matter what, he's always Christ-like. He's always in the right. He's always doing it for everybody. He's never doing it for himself. It's never selfish. And because of that, you can have him do the craziest thing in the world. So, you know, you can have him doing anything, and that's the joy. But I think that the problems with Superman are ultimately problems with the writers, that they aren't finding interesting enough stuff for the character to do to really explore the psychology of something. Because it's like exploring the psychology of Jesus. It's just, it's hard to do, but when you do it right, like you do with like The Last Temptation of Christ, you have an interesting character.
Okay, well, let's say Batman. I think Batman, when you look into the psychology, Batman is an extremely troubled person. Like he, besides all everything that happened to him, he dresses up like a bat and tries
up strangers.
Yeah, and punches things. But you have to look at like what caused him to be that way. The death of his parents, everything that's happened to him is terrible. But you got to, even like Spider-Man, you know, you look at all these things and why they do what they do is so interesting because they've had all these terrible things happen to them. Superman grows up and nothing really bad happens.
His whole planet was destroyed. Does he
know
that?
He's completely alone in the universe.
Superman technically should have more reason to be dark than, you know, Batman had both of his parents killed. Superman's the last person of his race. His whole planet got destroyed. Superman would have more of a reason to be evil than anyone, and the fact that he's not is what makes him so great.
That's well, because it reinforces that, like, the superego feeling, the feeling of, like, justification, you know, that it's like, I could do anything, and I have every reason to do something terrible for revenge, but I won't.
About Lex Luthor? I'd love to dive into his psychology.
Lex Luthor, what are things interesting? I'm going to get to Lex Luthor in a sec.
Absolutely.
What I think is really interesting is that 70 years ago, I mean, we gripe a lot as nerds that, you know, we're not taken seriously. The art form isn't taken seriously. Comics aren't taken seriously. 70 years ago, not only would we not have been able to have this talk because we would have been laughed at, but also we probably wouldn't have had anything to talk about because the stories weren't, these characters at their inception weren't complicated enough to consider their psychology because they were conceived as, we need someone to wear a costume that's different from this
guy.
They
were literally just archetypes and there was nothing built on
it. And really simple stories, but it's amazing that they've endured for so long, either because they were well advertised or something else, that we can actually explore what the psychological possibilities of a fictional character might be. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, as for Lex Luthor, I always like the, you know, Smallville in its early seasons had a really good take on him.
Smallville.
He's like a twin brother for Superman. He's sort of like the flip side of it. This idea that, you know, if I had all, it's an extension of that nerd desire. Like if I only had the power I didn't have, I would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Lex Luthor sort of, he doesn't have as much power as Superman. And because of that, he's weak and greedy and all this stuff and nearsighted. And evil.
In the graphic novel Luther, my favorite quote is Lex Luthor's talking and he says, everyone thinks Superman is this, everyone reveres him and they love him and they think he's so great and he's Earth's guardian. But what happens when Superman decides that we're not worthy to live anymore? He has the power to destroy us. And he says that's why he tries to kill Superman.
Well, and it's that thing where it's with any, I feel like with any projection that we do on another person, when in real life, when we're, you know, somebody who's got something we don't have and we're like, they don't deserve that because of all these character traits that I guess they must have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this idea where, is it just envy? Does he just envy what Superman has?
You also have to question, if he's saying, what if Superman turns around and kills us because he doesn't think we're worthy, then he's also looking out for humanity.
It's like a counterculture thinking where you say the establishment can't be trusted. It's too powerful. It's too big. Big corporations. I mean, I'm a liberal guy myself, I got to say. But, you know, a lot of times we have distrust of authority figures because they can do things that are beyond our control. And in a lot of ways, that's enough to be afraid of a big government or a big company or a big religion or a superhero.
That's why Lex Luthor in the Smallville series, he's shown so well. And that's why whatever he can take from Superman, he does. That's why he ends up stealing Lana Lang when he knows that Superman's in love with Lana Lang. He literally, whatever he can take from Superman, he tries to. Because even when Lex Luthor's dad starts calling Clark Kent his son, and you see how much that hurts Lex Luthor, because Lex Luthor, in all sense, he is the wonder child. Everyone should love Lex Luthor. You know what I mean?
By any standard except Superman.
But Superman's there, exactly.
What's interesting is if you look at, I'm going to get big for a sec, I'm not a religious man by any stretch of the imagination, but if you look at translations of the Bible, Satan is only mentioned a few times, and every time the actual direct translation is I don't remember if it's the opponent or something like that. It's he's there as an opponent for God, as a flip side for, like, he's not really, they don't really clarify that him and Lucifer are the same guy. He's there because God will have an idea, and this guy, Satan, will show up and be like, opposition. I oppose you. Yeah, yeah, I oppose you on this thing, and they'll fuck with Job's life or whatever. So really, if you look at it as like, that's the best example of an antagonist probably ever. And I think Lex Luthor fills that role perfectly, where whatever good thing Superman wants to stand for or accomplish, you need a character who is unambiguously opposed to him doing the right thing.
But if Superman
and then you need
wasn't
to justify
there,
it psychologically.
If Superman wasn't there, who's to say Lex Luthor wouldn't have used his genius for good? I mean, he's always been in the shadow of Superman.
That's in the All-Star thing. That's where he's talking about. Because he steals Superman's powers and he's like, oh, I can see the world. I can see how perfect it is. And then Superman knocks him out and he's like, look, if you could have saved the world years ago if you wanted to, but you don't. And
even a really good example, I don't know if you guys have ever followed the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited television show.
I haven't.
They have a really, really, really good episode in it where Lex Luthor finally does destroy the world. And he gave himself ultimate power so he can't die. And I forget what character it is that goes into the future. Maybe it's Flash. And basically, Lex Luthor's to this point, you know, where the world's destroyed, he got his way. And he completely agrees, and he says, without Superman, there's no point of living. And he ends up sending Flash back to stop him from destroying the world.
Well, oh, that's so cool.
The psychology, though, I feel like the psychology is retroactive. The psychology works backwards from the fact that when you're writing these stories, you think, no matter what, that Superman is in the right and Lex Luthor is in the wrong. And at that point, it becomes this thing where you're like, okay, what does Superman stand for? And how does Lex Luthor stand opposed to that? And then you can, it's easier to actually analyze the character of Lex Luthor than it is to analyze Superman, because he's a vehicle for our fantasies and we have problems taking responsibility for that. But like, you can think, why does this human character, you know, stand in the way? So like, he's got to be in the wrong. He's got to be flawed and he's got to be messed up.
Everyone needs, and that's exactly it. And what you were saying earlier is to have a superhero, the superhero is defined by the supervillain.
Yeah.
You can't have, like, you know, you go out and you see,
makes the hero more interesting.
Yeah, you see police officers and you say, you know, these are good guys. They're, you know, enforcing or stopping crime. But if you didn't have any criminals, would they still be, would they still have the mentality of a super, like of a police officer, or what would they do? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's given with Superman. And even I even think, if it wasn't for Lex Luthor, would Superman be Superman if he didn't have this guy to
that
oppose
opposition,
him?
Yeah.
If he didn't have anyone to oppose him at all, maybe Superman would have just been a farmer because he wouldn't have been needed. Who would
but that
have
would, wouldn't it have been amazing, though? I mean, this is my thing where I think if superheroes are just basically cops in costumes, the stories aren't as interesting. Whereas if you have this idea, okay, what if Superman hadn't lived in a world where there was evil opposition for him to fight and they just let him be a farmer? Imagine what we're dealing with, you know, kids are starving in the world and everything like that. If Superman had just been a farmer, he'd probably be the only one in the world who could feed every mouth, you know? I mean, this idea where if the superhero's only goal, I mean, it works in the pulp era in the 30s and 40s, but like, if you have this idea that the superheroes want to accomplish something outside of just punching the bad guy, and you just hint at that in the story, you see that in some stories where there's this beautiful sense of they really do want to make the world a better place. Tom Strong is an Alan Moore comic from the 90s and early 21st century, and it's great. He's a science hero, so when he's not fighting evil, he's inventing things that are making everybody's life more wonderful. And I kind of like that aspect. I like it when they bring that into Superman. But yeah, no, I just think it's interesting to think that, you know, who would Batman be without the Joker? Who would Spider-Man be without the Green Goblin?
Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, go for it.
It's actually based on that. It's a really good point. And there's a What If comic, and it's What If Spider-Man had gotten the power Cosmic from Silver Surfer. And it's, have you ever read that one?
No.
Cool. It's this brilliant comic that kind of talks about that, where, you know, Spider-Man, he's all about getting this, like, the thug. You know what I mean? He's all about getting the small criminal because he cleans up New York City. When given power Cosmic, he says, you know, screw fighting supervillains. I'm going to help the world how it really needs to be helped. And he tries to get Thor to go to Africa to give them rain. And he has all these plans to kind of save the world. And the other superheroes actually rail against him, and the supervillains also, and say, you need to use this power to defeat supervillains. And he says, no, if I don't fight the supervillains, supervillains
will
go away. And they end up actually taking the power from him because the rest of the Marvel Universe doesn't agree with this mentality.
Even the heroes.
Well, even the heroes. But think of, like, his everything was there. And this is, like, the world that we want to be. And it's so funny that even the superheroes are like, no, we're going to disappear if you do that and take away this power.
If it's just a stat, because that's it. It's like, you know, I mean, Watchmen meditated on this idea that they're just establishment figures and they only benefit from a very simple way of thinking, a simple way of looking at problems. And like, I want to read that. It sounds like a beautiful story. It sounds really interesting.
It's a really good one.
So Batman, again, going back to psychology, you were telling me, like, I never thought about it like this, but when you take Arkham Asylum for what it is, it's a hospital. And instead of throwing these guys in jail, Batman takes every criminal he beats to Arkham Asylum, to a hospital, to help them.
Yeah, it's this idea where if you – I mean, there's a sort of neoconservative fascist take on the character that's been really popular since Frank Miller did Dark Knight Returns, which is a great book, by the way.
I love it.
It's one of, my favorite books.
Everyone says read it.
And I have it, actually.
Can I? Okay, cool.
But again, that take on him was very sort of – one of the most interesting takes on him, but we it's sort of worn out its welcome, in my opinion. Batman's become a bit of an asshole. But this idea that – really, in my opinion, when he first showed up, he beat up a lot of them, took him to jail, and he killed a lot of supervillains in the 40s with a gun, which is something that isn't...
He started off as a villain.
Not as a villain, but in the 40s, there was a pulp mentality.
Yeah, for a very brief part.
And then it was actually because they censored it. They were like, it's too violent for kids, which is probably something to it. Not that you should censor it, but that it was a little dark for kids. Anyway, now we're back to comics being darker than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Mm-hmm. But
we're ready to accept that now.
We're ready to accept the darkness. But I think it's becoming a little extreme at times. But if you really look at the characters and what they suggest, if you actually have him as a compassionate hero... and you look at it through the perspective that he's actually trying to do some good. If Batman's only goal is revenge against criminals in Gotham City, him running around killing them would solve that problem. He'd get his revenge. Yeah. If we're actually looking at his psychology. So since he's not killing them, and he's not just because he's crazy, you got to think that there's some other goal in mind. And I think him taking them to Arkham, if writers were to approach it this way, it would be a welcome change of pace. He takes them to Arkham because he actually wants to see them helped. He pities his enemies. He would like to see them reformed.
Well, but I feel like
capacity.
Arkham is such a, like, that when you look at
such
inside,
place,
and it's like scientists working on you and trying to,
and
you
they're
know,
going mad themselves. Yeah. And a lot of his villains were like once doctors at Arkham and everything. So he's going through a lot, but like, you know, there's some heart there. And it's not, I'm not talking about cheesy, sappy sentimentality. I'm just talking about the fact that these heroes probably want something that more than a bloodbath. Mm-hmm. And the readers should be open to that, I think. Because if the readers are open to it and the writers are open to it, the stories could become more
evolve
human.
And go to somewhere completely different. That would be much welcomed. Yeah. You're right.
Completely different. We're a bit low on time. So if you guys want to plug anything, for me, I'm going to plug Nikki Patterson on Twitter. And follow us on Threadless Theater at Twitter.
Yeah, and Theater's THTRE. For Threatless Data, for the Twitter. And my Twitter handle is at IamUmed, UMED.
And I don't have anything to plug, so just please keep listening to this show. It's really good.
Woo.